Welcome to the latest interview with a tennis legend from the Tennis Worthy podcast, brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I'm Chris Bowers, and we have an understated but highly impressive champion from Spain to present to you today. Conchita Martinez was one of the great clay court players of her era, but she achieved something no one expected of her. She won Wimbledon, becoming the first Spanish woman to do so, and the first Spaniard, male or female, to win on the fabled Wimbledon grass in the open era of tennis.
It's a combination of work, talent and passion. To be okay when you were making stupid mistakes. You're not gonna play your best sometimes, but it's okay. Trust the process. I was up there, I was number two in the world, close to be number one, winning a lot of tournaments. So you had to be able to express yourself or your tennis in every surface, and I think I was able to do that.
Conchita played much of her career in the shadow of the more bubbly and outgoing Arantxa Sánchez Vicario. But beneath the quiet exterior, she has a real depth, which has led her to some trusted positions since she hung up her rackets, most notably becoming the first woman to captain the Spanish Davis Cup team. She sat down with me in New York. Conchita, what do you think it is that makes somebody a Hall of Famer?
I guess you have to play some good tennis. You have to win some titles. I don't know what it does. I mean, right now you get the fans also are involved, so it's good that you have a good fan club. But no, I mean, I think winning titles, anything that you achieve in your career is going to help you to be a Hall of Famer. And also, hopefully, having great values helps too.
When you think of yourself as a Hall of Famer, can you remember what it was like as a girl, imagining playing against, being in the same environment as the great names of tennis?
Well, I mean, when you start, you're very innocent, no? I mean, you pick up your racket and you play. I mean, for me, it was love at first sight. I picked up my racket and I was very passionate from the beginning. And, I guess you go through all of the stages where, you practice, you get better, you play different tournaments, you get better and everything like that. But, as you get better and better, you feel like maybe you can belong there, but I mean, it's overwhelming to see all of the amazing champions that are on the Hall of Fame and to be part or to be one of them and be part of this, wonderful association, like what it is, the Tennis Hall of Fame. It's amazing. It's a great honor and I'm very happy.
The story goes that you started at the age of 9,
right,
by hitting against a wall. Tell us about how that started and why you instantly felt it was a passion.
Well, you're right. I was 9 years old and we left in an apartment where I could see two tennis courts from, the window of my kitchen. And I see some people playing and stuff like that. And one day I'm like, okay, I'm going to go down there and see what happened. My father used to play a little bit, my brothers a little bit. And so I just went down, I picked up a racket, a tennis ball, and I started hitting against the wall. And I don't know, I just loved it from the beginning. And, after that I pretty much had a racket in my hand the whole time. So I was just playing against every wall that I could find, probably driving my parents crazy because I would do it at home too in every wall. So yeah, no, it was love at first sight.
Did you imagine the wall as a big name player? Did you think I'm playing against?
Yes, I did. Growing up, my idols were Navratilova and McEnroe. So I played against them many, many times. So, yeah, sometimes I had matches.
At what stage did your parents realize, we can't leave her hitting against the wall, we've got to get her proper coaching?
Well, I was pretty young and I was a very, very quick learner. Actually, that day when I went down and played against the wall, there was this coach from Monzón, which is my hometown. And he told my father, oh my God, you know, why don't you bring your daughter to, you know, to the one day that he had like classes. I think it was Saturday. I think she can play some good tennis, blah, blah, blah. So I went and, you know, I was his project, no? Like he saw somebody that could learn fast. So I waited until he finished his normal job. And we played at, you know, late in the evening sometimes, you know, my mom calling me at 10, 11, you know, 11 p.m. Like, come on, you guys got to stop now. You know, she's got to go to school tomorrow. But he was very passionate too. And yeah, I was 10, playing already some tournaments, small tournaments.
And winning them?
Not my hometown, but like my area, which is called Aragon. You know, there was another player in Huesca that was very good too. But I was, you know, 1-2. So, yeah, and then you have some people looking at you, and, like, I went to a club half an hour from my home where I got some better coaching, not in a sense that my coach was not good, but, like, I could play with different players of my age that were similar as me, and I would go every weekend. So my father would take me every weekend to practice there. And so on, like, you know, then I went to Barcelona, I think, when I was 12 years old. And yeah, there I go to a residence and, you know, stay there.
What was the motivation for you? Was it just fun, or was it like solving a puzzle? Or what do you remember about what motivated you?
It was a lot of fun. I love playing against the wall. I love playing with different people. I was happy on the tennis court. So I think it was that. Of course, you go through some stages, different stages, where, you know, not everything is so easy or so wonderful, but you know, like the passion for the sport, it's bigger than anything. And you started competing and looking good and winning tournaments and being one of the best in the, you know, in the whole world in your age, you know, make you believe that you could be a very good tennis player.
What made you better than other kids who could probably hit the same forehands and backhands as you, but why were you winning matches and they weren't?
I'm not sure that I have the answer to that, but I can speak for myself. Like, I was very perfectionist. I didn't hit a shot that, you know, I'm like, okay, that's the one. I will practice and hit over and over and over. I don't know if they hit the same as many tennis balls that I did, but I guess it's a combination of work, talent, and passion.
Did you work out a mindset for winning, or was it just a question of, today I'm playing this player, let's see if I can come out the winner?
You know, when you start, it's not that you're thinking like, you know, when you're like when you become a professional, then you have that strategy and all of that. But I was good at a strategy, and I like to, you know, to do different things with the ball and to make the my rival very uncomfortable playing against me. I don't know. Probably, yeah. I mean, at that time, you know, your state of mind is like, okay, I want to win this match, and I was very competitive and stuff like that.
Did you enjoy the close matches, or did you prefer to win 6-2, 6-1?
No, of course you prefer to win easy, but that's not the case.
But there's more problem solving in a close match.
Yeah, it is more problem solving, and it's very rewarding when you win that match, and also it can be very cruel when you lose that match. I mean, you learn from tough losses, and also you know that if you fight every point and you're there in every point, you're gonna have a chance to win in that match. So yeah, I mean, I had matches of every kind. No,
you mentioned that you went to Barcelona. You left home at the age of 12 and became residential to improve your tennis. Was that hard?
Yeah, of course it's hard, but it was a natural way of going. I mean, if I wanted to improve, you know, you had to get out of home. I mean, my hometown was small. It was like 16,000 people. I didn't have other kids that I could play. I played with always, you know, adults and stuff like that. But, you know, you have to prove yourself with other, the best players in the country of your age and different ages, and to continue to improve and learn from other coaches. And yeah, of course it was hard. I was 12 years old, not easy. My mom had a really hard time, but you know, I told my dad, I'm like, this is my dream, you know, I really want to do this. And
so you didn't have any doubts?
No, not one doubt, not one doubt.
So even at that stage, you knew what you wanted and you went for it, even though it meant leaving home?
Yes, I completely knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to play tennis. I wanted to be, you know, the best tennis player out there, the best that I could be, continue to learn. And like I said, I'm very passionate. I'm still very passionate about this sport and I love it. And, you know, I did then, yeah.
And were you homesick?
Of course, yeah.
So, and how did you overcome that?
I mean, it wasn't easy, and especially, I mean, you're 12, of course you're homesick, you miss your family, you miss your friends. I cried a lot. It was 2 hours away from my home. Sometimes my parents will come, but mostly, you know, I probably will go every Friday, come back on Sunday. And then as the years go by, you know, you stop that every weekend.
You're playing tournaments at weekends.
Yeah, and you go a little less and you make friends and, you know, then it's a little bit less difficult. But at the beginning, it was very hard.
But even when you were crying because you missed home,
there
was no sense of,
no,
I'm in the wrong place.
No, not at all, because my goal was to become the best player out there.
When did you first get a sense that you could be world class?
I think, when I went to Barcelona and I played not only national events now and play against, you know, I was, like I said, always one or two of my age. And you start playing more international events and you play in Europe, other tournaments. And, hey, look, I made it to the final, or look, I won the tournament. So, okay, I'm one of the best, not only in my country, but in the world. So I think around that age, when I was 14, 15, 16, I knew that I had a good chance, especially because I wanted it so much and I was doing everything possible to be one of the best.
You talk very confidently. Did you have doubts at that time?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like I said, I mean, I tend to forget the difficult moments and the negative moments. And of course, there were a lot of difficult moments out there. But if you ask me right now, would you do it again? I would do it again in a heartbeat with my eyes closed. Would I change some things? Probably. But, you know, I had no doubts. I had no doubts that I wanted to do this. And of course, I had like a very long career. I played 18 years. You know, when you have doubts, you probably quit. And I was not a quitter. You know, I wanted to continue and do my best.
It's really interesting that you say you tend not to focus on the difficulties or not to remember them. But on the basis that we all have to come through certain things en route to success, what were the biggest difficulties? Or can you pick out one difficulty, one setback you had where you really had to dig deep?
I mean, there is a lot of difficult moments out there. I mean, leaving home so young, for sure, is difficult. Going to a different country to practice and is difficult. Being away from, you know, not being able to have like a normal growing up when you're young. You know, you're very disciplined. Being on the road all the time, packing, sleeping in a different bed every week, winning, losing pretty much every week. You lose, no? I mean, you don't win every tournament. So there is some difficult times there. Changes, you know, growing up, being an adolescent, stuff like that. I mean, you have to go through all of these things, but also being very committed and being having discipline and stuff like that. Stop, you know, you couldn't do many things that other friends with your age would do. So, you know, this is difficult too.
And did you discover strengths in yourself by coming through these?
Yes, of
changes.
Course. Of yeah. course. I mean, you become a stronger person. You learn a lot from difficult moments. Of course, when you're in that moment, sometimes it's hard to see the light, but, you know, you just got to trust the process. And that's what I would tell a lot of the young players out there, you know, trust the process, trust and surrender yourself with a group, a very good group of people that want the best for you, and trust your coach and go for it.
You were 16 when you won your first title, and you got to the fourth round at Roland Garros as
Tampa?
Well.
No, Sofia, no?
Sofia.
Yeah, I remember. Yes, yeah.
Were you ready for that? Were you ready for everything that comes with being round of 16 as a slam and a WTA titleist?
I don't know if I was ready for that, but it's certain that everything was going very fast. Like I said, I mean, when I picked up the racket when I was young, very little, I learned very fast. And that's something that my coach would tell me. I'm like, anything that he could say, you know, like 3 or 4 shots and, you know, I had it. So everything was kind of quick. And yeah, being 16 and winning a professional WTA event already and then playing your first Grand Slam. And not only I got to the fourth round, but I came from the qualifying. So there were many matches played there. So I guess I was ready, right? I mean, I continue. You know, I tried to always step with my 2 feet on the floor and be humble and, you know, just do my own thing and try to be the best out there.
What do you think makes somebody a quick learner, or do you think they either just have it or they don't?
I guess work, you know, repetitions.
And respect for teachers?
Yeah, respect the teachers for sure. Listen. But also, if you're passionate, it's easier. And, you know, if you have a little bit of talent, it's going to be easier too. So, but if you don't have the talent, work is always the deal.
Many of today's top players work with a psychologist. It's
yes.
become normal. It was less normal when you were starting. Did you work with a psychologist?
I did. I did work with a psychologist, and it really helped a lot. I was probably 21 when I started working with him, and it was on and off because, you know, everything that a professional tennis player has to do is like time, you know, everything is work. And even when you're having a massage, it feels like work and it should be like, wow, this should be feeling good. But it's work because you're trying to recover. So there's a lot of things that you have to do. And sometimes you feel like, okay, I have it, you know, I'm okay now. I don't need to work as closely with a psychologist. But I think it's very, very important and helped me.
What did you learn most?
I learned a lot of things. I mean, we worked a lot of on a lot of things. We did a lot of relaxation and visualization, and that helped me a lot. We created a plan to follow when I was on the tennis court, when I had a match, some routines that you work out there, and different things, and how to cope with difficult times. And I'm not saying that, you know, working with psychologists, you're going to be able to cope with difficult times and you're going to win every single match, but it's going to probably help you a lot, and I totally recommend it.
When you say that your psychologist helped you with relaxation, does that mean that what you needed was to channel your energies more? Were you a little bit too almost excited?
No, I think I've been a pretty quiet person and not overexcited ever. You know, I was pretty relaxed. I had my nerves, of course, but I wasn't really like panicking before matches or anything. I was quite relaxed. But that helped me out to calm down. Sometimes you know, I have, you know, he made two different tapes for me that I could listen, you know, one to calm down and one to like, you know, get in.
Pump yourself up.
Yeah, pump myself up to.
What, before a match?
Before a match. So it was different ways of working. And yeah, when I went to see him, we always finished with some, you know, like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes where we did relaxation and visualization and stuff like that. And I don't know, it helped me a lot.
And did you visualize just being relaxed on a tennis court, or did you visualize winning matches?
Yeah, sometimes it was related with a tennis court, and sometimes it was like I could find myself on a beach and, you know, just being relaxed there. And sometimes it was with energy, you know, we work a lot with energy, like, you know, you feel every single part of your body, and that helps a lot for your body as well. So different techniques.
So it got you with the right energy to play a tennis match, and it allowed you to sleep well at night.
There you go. Yeah. And I think that's really important. That worked for me. And I know it's probably different now, but, you know, I would totally recommend it.
I suspect it's the same outcome, even if they use different methods.
Yeah. I don't know if, over my years of coaching, I work very closely with psychologists of my players too. And some have different ways of working, totally respectful. For me, you know, it's very important that the player is ready to play every match and is not going to have any distraction, and to have all of the routines that is going to have, you know, help them stay in the moment and just play point by point, you know.
Tennis is an individual sport, but you played an awful lot of Fed Cup for your country, and you played in 3 Olympics. What did playing in a team give you that made you a better player?
Well, I think it's completely a different feeling to play in a team and to play for your country, and not only to play with your mates, you know, but also the group of people that help you. For example, in Fed Cups and Olympics, you know, you go with a doctor, you go with some physios that are not your personal ones, you know, they work for the federation. You become very close to those people that are trying to help you pass that week, trying to help you with their experiences. And I think it's very valuable as well. You create a very, very strong bond. And it's been a very, very important for my career. And that gives you a lot of a push also to go on and play again for yourself, be reunited with your team. But there are different points of view that also, with people with great experience, that helps you. So,
did you ever find yourself on court thinking, I have to do something differently because it's not just me I'm playing for? I'm playing for my team and my country.
I don't know if do something different, but yeah, I had to win this match for my team. You know, this is going to mean so much for my country. You know, I'm playing for them too. And it's not me. It's you know, this is for my team, for my country, for everybody that's looking. Yeah, it's another motivation out there. Sometimes it's a lot and very stressful. And you know, I remember finishing some Fed Cup ties where, like, I had to take the week off because, I mean, my body was like, I was sore everywhere, but not, I mean, you're used to playing matches, but not with that sort of tension, added tension.
So it took more out of you?
It took more out of, yeah.
And how did you learn to deal with that?
Like I said, I mean, be smart with your schedule. And sometimes I had to, you know, take the decision of playing Fed Cup and not playing a very important tournament the week after. You know, that was rewarding for me because we were very successful. We won 5 tights, you know, and 5 finals and winning the Olympic medals and everything. I mean, that is very, I think it's very important in my career. And so what was one tournament less? I don't know. Some players think different nowadays and they sacrifice Fed Cup. But for me, I mean, it was very important.
So if Fed Cup, or Billie Jean King Cup as it now is, takes a lot out of you, what was it like to have the Olympics coming to Barcelona when you were 20 years old?
Yeah, that was It was great. It was amazing. It was, wow, I'm going to play in my country, my first Olympics. I was so excited. But in a way, it's what I'm saying, you know, like you live there, you have your friends, you have your family, you know, you have everybody looking to you to do well, to, you know, we were playing good, Arantxa and I. And everybody was like, okay, you know, you got to get a medal, blah, blah, blah. So that's extra pressure. But in a way, it was wonderful to have the Olympics there.
And you got the medal.
We got the medal, yeah. Yeah, we got the silver medal. We lost in three sets. We were close for that gold, but it didn't happen. But in the end, it was our first medal together, and it was very special. We were young, so that was a huge victory.
Your greatest success came at the place where perhaps one would least have expected it,
right,
at Wimbledon, because you didn't like grass for a while. In fact, I think the one you won was only your third Wimbledon as in the main draw. What was it about grass that you didn't like at first?
Well, I like clay a little bit better because I have more time to express myself on the court.
Express yourself.
Yeah, you have more time. You have more time to think, you know, like, okay, I can do this with the ball because I have more time. At the beginning on grass, everything was coming too fast. It felt like I was rushed. I couldn't do, if you remember my game, and you know, I was very creative on the tennis court. So it felt like rush, like I couldn't do my short angles, like I, you know, every the ball was bouncing very low, you know, I couldn't use my forehand as the weapon that I was in some other surfaces. But you learn if you want to be the best tennis player out there, you have to play good in every surface. And I think the success in playing better on grass was like, okay, to having an understanding, you know, it's like, okay, you know, because I am a perfectionist, so you're not going to play your best sometimes, but it's okay. Trust the process. If the forehand is not like on the corner, on the same place that you wanted to place it, but still was effective, and you're going to have another chance to win the point a different way. So it was like, you know, admitting that if it wasn't perfect, it was okay. And to be okay when you were making stupid mistakes, and to continue.
So did you master grass by working out changes in your playing style, your technique?
Or everything.
Was it a change of mindset?
It was everything. It was a combination because, and accepting, I wanted to say the word, accepting that if it wasn't perfect, it was okay. So yeah, it changes on my game, of course. You had to shorten back your grand strokes, you know, you gotta use some different ways and play a different way that you used to play on clay. And mentally, it was very important to accept and, you know, to go match by match.
You walked out for your first Grand Slam final against the woman you'd imagined when you were hitting against
right.
the wall, Martina Navratilova. Yeah. How was that as an experience? What was going through your head as you prepared for that match?
Well, that was an amazing experience. I mean, the whole tournament was amazing. You know, I had some very tough matches, especially the semifinal against Laurie McNeil. I think it was
10-8.
10-8 in the third, and it was very nerve-wracking. But I came out of that match, I think, stronger and very tired, but stronger. Playing Martina was very special. I mean, she was going for her 10th title there. But I had the confidence of playing very good on grass that year. I think the year before, did I make the semis? I don't know.
You did well. Yes.
I think I made the semifinal. So, and playing Martina, I just won a match against her at the Italian Open in Rome a few months before. And I don't know, I felt confident that I could win again, even if it was her best surface. And, you know.
Did it help you that she was the heavy favorite? Because most people expected her to win.
Yeah. I don't think it helped. No. I was so focused on on my own game, on keeping the routines. On, you know, I was doing so well. I mean, probably the match against Laurie helped me with those passing shots that were so great in the final, and they were great in the semifinal also, no? But it was a great practice to play against Martina, because she was going to come in to the net, serve and volley, chip and charge. I mean, put pressure on me, and I was ready. So, no, I wasn't thinking of, is this going to help me that people are expecting her to win? No.
What was the single biggest factor in your being able to win that match?
Just to be consistent out there, you know, to move her around, to move well, because if you don't move well on grass, you're not going to hit a good shot. So it was very important for me to keep my legs moving, to be grounded and positive and aggressive in a way, but playing with patience.
Positive in the sense of what? Constantly believing you could win?
Yes. And I did. I was very positive. I don't know. I was nervous, but it wasn't unbearable. Sometimes you're nervous, and it happened to me before, other times in my career, where my nerves didn't let my legs move, and that's the worst feeling that you can have. That happened to me.
And how did you get over that?
You try to activate yourself. You try to give you a, you call it a pep talk, no? Like,
yes.
Like very positive. And sometimes you can, sometimes you cannot. And when you cannot, you ended up losing that match. And sometimes you can overcome that, and you're still in time to, like, if you're moving and you know your tennis is going to be there and you have a chance. But if you cannot move, it's very difficult.
So did you ever give yourself a pep talk so that you released your legs to allow you to move?
Yes, for sure, yeah.
Interesting. And so the connection between what you were able to say to yourself and the physiological response.
Yeah. You talk, and then actually you have to activate, you know, like quick, you know, doing some exercise where you're going to move your feet quick. But the mental power in this game is huge. And if you're in a good state of mind, you have a lot to win. And it's very demanding, you know, because it's, you know, it's a very long season. And to be present in every match with, in the spotlight and with everything that is going in our life, it's not easy, because we are in the spotlight. So everybody has a problem or a bad day. And I mean, you only have to show off for your work, and you know, like people that are in the spotlight, some things are going to affect, and some people don't understand that.
So did you have to learn to deal with the spotlight? I mean, everybody has bad days, whatever they do, but
of course,
most people aren't in the spotlight. Were there any strategies you developed, any techniques?
Well, you work with, you know, you talk to your team, you work with the psychologist, and you try to overcome those difficult moments. But yeah, it is very difficult, where everybody has an opinion. And if you didn't play that way, or you didn't move, or you, like, everybody's going to say, because, I don't know, she's not working, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, whatever they're going to say in that moment, where it's like, okay, what do you know? It's true. We don't know. You're not inside of the team. You're not, you don't even know. Because we're not going to say, oh, my God, I woke up at 3 a.m. I got my period, and I cannot, you know, people don't understand that. Or my grandfather is ill. And, you know, sometimes a lot of people don't know these things, and these things are going to affect the players. We're humans. So I think we need to support the players and not be so hard on them.
Very interesting. You won Wimbledon at a time when you were the dominant clay court player. You were winning all the major clay court titles below Roland Garros, and yet you never got to the final of Roland Garros until 2000. Do you feel that you should have done more on clay, or were you actually underestimated as a player on all surfaces, given that you got to the Australian Open final in 1998?
I think for me it was very important to do well in every surface. Of course, clay was my favorite, and I think it's always going to be my favorite. I shouldn't say that because grass was amazing and winning Wimbledon was amazing. But
well, you grew up on clay, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you could express yourself.
Well, when I was 9 years old, the tennis courts that I had below my the apartment, they were really, really fast, real cement, and with a little.
So your first surface was fast hard court.
But that didn't last long. I mean, and then you practice more on clay. But I wouldn't say I underachieved. I would have loved to win Roland Garros. I think underachieving would be like losing first, second round, maybe. You know, if you see the record that I had in Roland Garros, I think I did a lot of quarterfinals, a lot of semifinals, one final. Yeah, I wish I would have won, but it didn't happen. But I think I'm happy with my results. And then in other tournaments, no? It was good.
Do you feel you were able to express yourself on all three surfaces? You talked about not being able to express yourself on grass in the early days.
Yeah, I definitely did. And another surface that was very hard for me was indoor fast, like Supreme Court was. We used to play the championships at the end of the year and here at the Madison Square Garden in a Supreme Court, which was like a gummy that it didn't bounce, and it was also very fast, and that was hard for me. But in the end, you know, I was up there. I was number two in the world, close to be number one, winning a lot of tournaments. So you had to be able to express yourself or your tennis in every surface. And I think I was able to do that, yes.
Just a word about retiring as a player. How easy is it to retire when it's been really all your life that you've been a tennis player?
Easy. Not easy at all. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. And you have to be, I don't know, for me, I can only talk from my experience. I had an injury with my heel that it wasn't allowing me to practice the way I wanted to play my best tennis. And when you're, like I said, when you're like making the quarter, semis, finals, etc., if you cannot practice the same, you know, your tennis is going to be a little lower. I mean, your fitness is probably not going to help you as much. So losing second round, third round is not fun, and it's hard to understand. So 2004 was a little bit hard for me because of that, my injury and not being able to do fitness the way that it was going to help me the most to continue to play at that high level. So in 2004, I almost retired. I didn't because I started doing a preseason. A coach of mine, Gabriel Urpi, was working with Penetta, and they called me to play. And so I'm like, okay, can you play with Flavia, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I can go. So I started to play, and he's like, why are you retiring? I mean, your level is up, blah, blah, blah. So I played one more year. So I think that year helped me a lot to be in peace of my retirement, because if I would have retired 2004, I don't know, I wasn't quite ready for that. 2005 was the right, no, 2006 I retired. I played 2005, I won one more tournament. I made it to the finals in doubles, to the year-end finals, so it was good.
And were you at peace?
I was at peace. Mm. I had surgery, and I told, it was 2006, yeah. And I told Virginia Ruano Pascual, which we played doubles and we made it to the finals, final four. You know, wait for me, you know, I might play, we can play doubles together in the next Olympics. But in the end, after surgery, I was not ready. So I told her, you know, I think this is going to be.
And you've coached a fair bit and been captain also of Davis Cup and Fed Cup teams. How easy was it to switch from being the player where everything's about you to being the coach where everything's about others?
You know, it wasn't difficult at all. I love coaching, and even as a player in my last years, I was like looking at the other player and thinking, you know, you should do this better or that, or, you know, this is why you missed, blah, 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 in my head. So it became natural that I could help other players. I didn't have a problem because I never liked to be the center of attention in that sense. So the transition wasn't hard. I mean, it's always nice to be recognized and to have your work recognized. I think I had that, and I do, but I don't need to be the center of attention.
Are you a perfectionist as a coach?
Yes, I like things. I like to work a certain way, and I'm very professional and, you know, yeah.
So you were the first Spanish woman to win Wimbledon, and you coached the second Spanish woman
right.
to win Wimbledon, Garbiñe Muguruza. What do you think was the biggest thing you gave her?
I think she liked my personality, which I think I gave her some peace of mind. To help her with my experiences, she would ask me a bunch of questions, and we share a lot of stories from my time, and a lot of stories have been similar with her. And like in the coaching area, you know, I believe a lot on her skills, and she had a very aggressive game, and you know, we worked a lot on her forehand and on being consistent, but still continue to be aggressive from the baseline and transition to the net. I think she's an amazing player, and you know, she's done amazing career.
And your captaincy of the Spanish Fed Cup and Davis Cup teams.
Yeah.
I mean, the Davis Cup is the interesting one.
Yeah.
How was your relationship with the players? And if I may ask this question, did you get the respect that you deserve?
I did. I got a lot of respect. I feel like people respect me a lot in tennis. I have a wonderful relationship with the players, being the women or the men. And I felt very respected and included, and, you know, they listen to me. I mean, when I first was appointed to the job, I made sure I spoke to every single player, and I made sure that this was a real deal. And, you know, it wasn't like, okay, like you cover something and it's like it's going to be just this tight and that's it. I'm like, okay, I'm here. And if I do a good job, you know, I want you to consider me for the next years. And they did, and I was 3 years with them.
Did you have any disciplinary issues where you had to say, guys, I'm the boss?
No, I mean, I don't like it to be like, you know, my way or my way. I like to talk to the players, to understand their feelings. You know, I want them to have discipline. There is a certain way that things are going to be running, but they were very good.
In 2020, you were inducted into the Hall of Fame. What memory stands out for you from that day in Newport?
Well, they make an unbelievable job. It's very, very special. All the surroundings, the history there is there, and how they treat you, no? I mean, they make you feel very special. They make you feel like you've done something huge.
Did you need to be made to feel that? It's interesting you say that.
No, you don't need it, but they make sure that this is going to be a very special day for you. And they do. They make it a very, very special day. Walking through the grounds, walking through the museum there, seeing all these amazing champions, and to become, you know, it's such an honor to be able to share that with all of these great names. I mean, it is amazing. But like I say, in Europe, I mean, people don't know what...
No, the Hall of Fame concept is not that well known
no.
outside America.
Right.
But I hope you felt you deserved to be there.
Yes, and it wasn't an easy ride because, you know, it was my third time where...
You've been
running,
nominated.
Yeah. And every time that I wasn't nominated, it was kind of like a downer, no? Like, man, you know, what else do I need to do? But I was running against these amazing players that they deserve to be there too. So I was so happy that finally, I mean, I had a large group of people that were rooting for me and were asking for boats for me and stuff like that. The support of these friends and people like Billie Jean herself supporting my induction was such an honor.
And when these days you see kids and perhaps their parents trying to make their way in tennis, what do you say to them by way of advice, or what advice would you most be happy giving?
I think at the beginning it's very important that you enjoy and that you have fun on the court. So these extra pressures too young are never going to be positive. I feel like as a parent, you should accompany your son, your daughter, but it's better if you let the professionals do their job and you trust them. I'm not saying that you should be away, but, you know, be there for your daughter, comfort her when she's having a bad day, be a father, and don't put that extra pressure. Just let them be, let them follow their dreams, and, of course, let them have fun.
Conchita Martinez, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and memories with us.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
There's a woman who seems very comfortable in her own skin. Conchita talked about being the first woman to coach the Spanish Davis Cup team, but I felt she almost took gender out of it simply by being the coach on the basis of her greater experience and her ability to get the best out of people according to the road each individual needs to take. Conchita Martinez is a worthy inductee of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. We'll have another big name from the history of tennis next time. Meanwhile, you can help us grow the pool of people who get to hear and enjoy these interviews. Please tell your friends and anyone else who's into finding out what makes excellence happen where they can find these interviews with the legends of our sport. The Tennis Worthy podcast is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame in association with the Tennis Radio Network. I'm Chris Bowers. Thanks for listening. See you next time.